Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz are back. It's Thursday morning, so this is a Thursday morning recording for your Thursday morning delivery. Part of the world's going to get it on Friday because, man, some of you guys are way out there. Speaking of way out there, boy, what's happening in Maui breaks my heart. So I know we have some listeners in Hawaii. I know they're different islands, but still, shout out to those lovely people in Hawaii who may be affected by what's happening with this hurricane and these fires. That is really sad. We have a colleague who was just a couple of them who have been in Hawaii in the last few years, but Matt Wells, one of our editors, was on a cruise and he literally was in these spots that went down, man. That's heartbreaking. Anyway, let's dedicate the show to those people in Hawaii. And obviously pray for the recovery of that island. On today's show, obviously, we'll talk about the UFC card coming up this weekend with RDA and Vicente Luque. Logan Storley, Brennan Ward, they headline Bellator 298. Got a lot of news to go over. The results from Tough, the results from Dana White Contender Series. So buckle up and we'll start the show. As always, I failed to mention, we also have a guest on today's show. Maurice Green will join us. Former UFC heavyweight veteran. Now with the PFL, he's a semifinalist, and he'll be getting down on Friday, August 18th on ESPN. He's headlining against Henan Fajeda. And it's not too often the 6'7 giant is facing someone taller than him. Henan Fajeda is 6'8". So this should be a nice, fun main event for the PFL. We'll talk to him as well. So let's get going. I guess the first thing I remember goes, because there's lots to go over. I try and go in the order in which it was received. But Izzy finally has his opponent. He's fighting Sean Strickland at UFC 293. So there's your main event, folks, for those of you out in Sydney.
There weren't that many options, right, that like really would pop or make much sense. It was just one of those perfect storms. And okay, I mean, we got Sean Strickland. He's gonna talk it up. Izzy's gonna fall for it. At the end of the day, though, do we think Sean Strickland's gonna beat Israel Adesanya? That's a tough one. I mean, he's gonna have to put on his perfect performance. Israel Adesanya is gonna have to put on his worst performance, I think.
Yeah, I root for the guys from Extreme Couture, not like hardcore waving a flag, you know, not like that bad, but this is a tough task, goes for Sean Strickland. His main weapon is his cardio. So the first thing he needs to do, in my opinion, is just put a pace on. The problem is he's also hittable, right? And with Izzy, Izzy's power is, in my opinion, sometimes, I'm not going to say overrated, I'm going to say overstated. He has it, don't get me wrong, that's how he got his title back. But a lot of his fights do go to decision. They don't just end with this amazing strike from the former kickboxing champ. It's nothing like that. And I'm not trying to throw shade. What I'm saying is he's a sniper. He can definitely put you out with one punch. And so Sean Strickland has to be wary of that. I don't think Izzy fears that in Sean Strickland, that he has that type of power to knock him out. But anyway, Izzy's got pretty damn good cardio himself. Although I noticed he gets tired you know, in the later rounds, just as much as the next guy. I think Sean Strickland would be very smart to just switch it up a little bit. And here's what I mean by that. Sean Strickland should try to wrestle, not because it's fun to watch, just ask Corey Sanhagen, just because he needs to try and exhaust Israel Adesanya and also throw him off. If they just stand there and kickbox, which is what Sean Strickland loves to do, it's just not going to go good for him, man. I think I'm going to see a similar ending as to what we saw from Alex Fajeda. It won't be a one-hitter quitter, but I think it'll be basically a sequence of punches that catches Sean, and Sean won't be able to answer. And guess what? He's going to be very angry when he looks at the tape and just says, why did I do that? I think Sean needs to do something like what Jared Cannonier did with Marvin Vettori. Marvin Vettori usually does not get tired, goes, but Cannonier said, oh, yeah, watch this. And he put on an amazing pace. I think Sean Strickland needs to put on that type of pace, but also mix in some wrestling and just get into those later rounds where maybe he can catch Izzy with some punches, maybe take him down, you know, do some ground and pound. I don't know. This is a real tall task for Sean Strickland.
It's weird because Israel Adesanya is such a good fighter. And in regards, like in the way that we speak of him, he's not untouchable either, right? Like for the longest time, when you're talking about GSP, there's just this mystique. Anderson Silva, there's this mystique. But then eventually they kind of get touched up where now it's no longer like this incredible mountain to climb. You could stand with Israel Adesanya and he's been knocked out before. And we've seen that you could also wrestle him, right? Sean can do all those things. It's just he's got to be really smart about it. And that's just something that at times he does not do in his fights. And then he'll just fall back on, yeah, man, but I know, I just like the bang. Like, that's cool. But if you want to win a title, you got to listen to your coaches. And what's the one thing you always hear about Sean Strickland is he does not listen to his coaches. So it's going to be tough. But last night, I just happened to be watching Anderson Silva and I forgot his name. New York, Long Island. Guy knocked him out. Chris Weidman. I watched that fight. And you know what? Israel Adesanya does a lot of those silly things. And the shot that Chris Weidman caught him with wasn't really the hardest shot in the world. It just landed on the button. And that he can do. Sean Strickland can do that. If Israel Adesanya toys around with him and doesn't take him serious, there are ways Sean Strickland can win the fight. And that's what kind of makes the whole situation interesting.
That's actually a pretty good example because Weidman, it was a four-punch combo. And I remember the third punch was like this lazy backhand, like almost like feeling worthy again, like that type of thing. And then he caught him with a hook. It was just on the button. Sean Strickland is definitely capable of that. The problem is, look, if Sean sets up a nice 1-2 and he turns his hips, you know, puts his legs into it, yes, he's slowly but surely, he's added some power to his punches. Reminds me of Michael Bisping. Michael Bisping had a nickname. They used to call him Pillow Hands, actually. But towards the end, he actually started to sit on his punches, and he developed some power, and he won the title from Luke Rockhold, a guy that blasted him the first time they fought. And he put it on him, man, really, really nice. He worked at it, and he developed some power. He still wasn't known as the hardest puncher at middleweight, but enough that it won him a title. And yeah, Strickland probably could do something like what Weidman did. Weidman was kind of out of frustration a little bit. And so messed around a lot. But Adesanya can be emotional at times, and it'll be up to Strickland to poke at him all week, poke at him on fight day, poke at him during the fight, and maybe see if he can catch the other guy making some sort of a mistake. But yes, I think every fight that goes by, Strickland listens to his coaches just a little bit more, which is called obviously some maturity. You know, I just think that I think we're gonna have a I think it's gonna be a fun fight, and Strickland's personality will definitely build it on fight week. It'll be cool, and you know, and that's that. This might just be one of Izzy's easier title defenses. Like I say, if he just kind of, he's a master at distance and gauging someone's speed and their angles and seeing what they do. And again, if Strickland only offers kickboxing up, Izzy, I think, is going to have a good time, especially if Strickland doesn't put a pace on him, which means he's got to kind of go into that zone where he can get sniped. So it, I don't know. I leave it to Eric Nixick to come up with some sort of a game plan and some options so that he's just not out there and he's kind of a sitting duck. Izzy's got reach, he's got speed, he's got power. Man, those are some big things going, you know. But again, cardio becomes something else in rounds 4 or 5. And maybe Sean can get to that point. Now, UFC 293. At this point, I wanted to give you guys an update of what it looks like, because I remember we felt like not only did they need to add a main event, they need, because they haven't been to Sydney, Australia in 4 years. They used to be kind of a big destination for them. A, just the country of Australia, but B, Sydney, their capital. You know, it almost sounded like they could, kind of like London, like you almost wanted to go there once a year, you know, if you were the UFC. But it's been 4 years, and so they're back on September 9th. 9th to us, 10th to them, at the Kudos Bank Arena. Israel Adesanya versus Sean Strickland. Deun Jung versus Carlos Olberg. I like Olberg, but I don't know if that's a co-main event to me. Manel Kopp versus Kaikar France. That's pretty cool. I like that. Tai Tuivasa versus Alexander Volkov. I like that. Justin Toffa versus Austin Lane. Okay, it's not like that fight's not going to suck. That's going to be a banger, but that's kind of like a cheap throw-in by the UFC, because they know that that's probably enough to give us that vicious KO, get us foaming at the mouth. But is it really, really top-notch mixed martial arts? Probably not. Gabriel Miranda versus Shane Young, John McDessie versus Jamie Mullarkey. You see what I'm saying, guys? I think it still needs one more fight like to make me go, okay. You know, now I feel pretty damn good.
Yeah, I could agree with that. And actually, I thought the Kaikara France was more of the co-main event when it was all announced. But, you know, when you hear it, the best way I could describe it is you hear it and you go, okay. But you're not jumping out of your seat going, oh, my God, I can't wait. Now, come fight week, it might be a different feeling, because Izzy's Izzy and Sean is just odd. You know, he can kind of get different reactions out of people. Maybe we're fired up when it comes to fight time, but right now it's not an insult, but you're not jumping out of your chair going nuts for these fights.
Here's a couple more. Jack Jenkins versus Chef Mariscal. Blood Diamond versus Charlie Radke. And Tyson Pedro versus Anton Turkelish. They did lose Casey O'Neill versus Vivian Araujo, except Araujo picked up an opponent. And I thought I saw it on Junkie yesterday. I'm going to see if I can track it down. But Tapology hasn't updated their card. Casey O'Neill has a broken nose, I believe. So I'll see if I can find that fight that's there. And, I'm not in any way trying to say that's your co-main or anything like that. But it was a fight that was there. I'm trying to give them as much credit as I can for the card that they did build. But anyway, moving on from that. Okay, a lot sooner than that, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks before that, is UFC 292. They lost a fight. Jeff Neal versus Ian Machado Gary. Neal is out. In steps in, Neal Magny. Now, I had posted goes, Kevin Holland, give him a call. He usually is pretty down to fight. Kevin Holland just strikes me as a guy that can make weight no problem and just loves the fight. Like, strategy, be, you know, out the door, out the window, the guy just can fight pretty damn good, especially on late notice. He seems kind of like a go-to guy to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the dude. And I think we got a kind of a glimpse at what he makes. And it's a pretty decent paycheck, dude. If he keeps rolling those out, holy shit, man, that's life-changing money for him. So anytime that situation goes down, I think that is who you call. And I have a feeling they probably did call him. There's just because it sort of makes too much sense, but I'm sure there was a reason why he couldn't do it.
Well, at the end of his last fight, he did say he wanted to move up to 85. He wants to eat, so maybe he just was out of that range, but he just seems to have some incredible genes, man, like where losing the weight and getting down to 170 is just zero problem for him. But anyway, I found that name. It's going to be Jennifer Maia that steps in and fights Vivian Araujo. So moving on from that and moving on from 292 being a big story because of that fight that fell out. Okay, a few other announcements were made in the last few days. Bellator 300. We should have known. 298 this weekend in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. 299 follows that. Well, 300 is a pretty big round number. Hell, the UFC hasn't even gotten to 300, although those are 300 pay-per-views, whereas Bellator, these have pretty much been their regular fight series, arena series, whatever you call them. They've had a couple pay-per-views as well and some big tentpole events, which are basically stacked cards. But this Bellator 300 card is pretty stacked. So these are the four title fights that'll take place at Bellator 300 on October 7th at the Fachanga Arena in San Diego. Not the Fachanga Reservation, which is just outside of Temecula. This is the Fachanga Arena in San Diego, so it's downtown San Diego. It used to be called the San Diego Sports Arena. Brian Bader is going to headline against Linton Vassell. So Bader will put his heavyweight strap up against Linton Vassell. Chris Cyborg takes on Kat Zingano for Cyborg's featherweight title. Usman Nurmagomedov, the lightweight champ, he fights former champion Brett Primus. Now, this has nothing to do with the Grand Prix that's taking place. The winner of the Grand Prix will fight the winner of this fight. And then Liz Carmouche takes on her good friend, training partner, and former champ Ilima Leigh McFarlane. That's really, really nice. That's a really nice card, Gills. I like that one.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, the question is, could it be the last event we ever see? We never know. We keep hearing those talks, right? But to me, the one that stands out the most is Cyborg and Kat Zingano. And it's because they made us care about it. You know, they both were very, very vocal. And now, you know, had there not been any trash talk, I would have thought, man, I just feel like Cyborg's the better fighter. She's just going to run through her. But all this trash talk, it's made me more excited for this fight. It's finally here, was the feeling I got when I heard it. So it's going to be an interesting night.
I was holding on to I was holding out for something. Once the Bellator PFL talks emerged a few weeks ago, and I heard Bellator 300 for a half second, I thought, ooh, you know what would be nice is if somehow part of all this that's going on, Kayla Harrison's going to fight Chris Cyborg because she teased some big announcement. Mm-hmm. I knew that it could be Kat. Nice. I knew it could be Kat, but I thought, oh, man, imagine if it's Kayla. Holy cow. That might even be so big that it might headline over Bader and Vassell. Usually it's heavier the heavier the weight class, the more likely they are to headline. But this one could be so big that it might, you know, one could introduce that. I don't know if it gets shot down in a meeting, but one could say, well, what would we say to that? And I think you'd have to hear that out.
Yeah, that would have been nuts.
Yeah. So as far as Bellator and PFL and what's going on, speaking of teasing, Don Davis, who's one of the executives over at PFL, he recently said that something big's coming down the pipelines. Ray Sefo was asked about it at the last post-fight press conference after their playoffs in San Antonio, and he kept saying, man, I want to tell you guys, but I can't. But something is coming down the pipelines, and we think it has to do with those rumors of Bellator and PFL, I guess, becoming one. I think Bellator goes to the PFL. PFL buys them, or it just looks like, you know, that's the of the two franchises or the two promotions, that's the one that is going to keep its name and keep going, absorbing the Bellator talent. But please do not quote me on that. I've just heard it from enough people to think that that's what's happening, not vice versa, and not any other promotions being involved.
Right.
Anyway, all right, so we continue here. We got Bellator out of the way. We got UFC 293. They got their main event. Now let's talk about an update on Stephen Thompson. He was supposed to fight Michelle Vajeda at UFC 291 in Salt Lake City. He didn't because Michelle Vajeda came in 3 pounds over. Stephen Thompson thought about it, and apparently behind the scenes he was told, you know, you'd get 20% of the other guy's money. Stephen Thompson said, no, I fought bigger guys before like that were already bigger than me, missed weight, and by the time I fought them, they were just, you know, big. I did my job. I've never missed weight. What Dana White said when asked about it was, hey, look, this guy makes a lot of money. We're not just going to write him a check for not fighting. We explored options like, would you take this other fight? Would you take this other fight in a few weeks? And apparently Thompson kept saying, no, 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 just give me my money and I'm out. He goes, that's not the way it works. He seemed to imply that if he was like a 10-10 guy or 12-12 guy, he'd probably just go, yep, here's your money. We'll call you when we're ready for the next fight. But because Stephen Thompson is regarded as a big name, a guy that can headline a fight night or be part of a pay-per-view like UFC 291, I think they wanted to pencil him in somewhere. Go. Something leads me to believe, too, maybe Australia was thrown out there. Who knows? I don't know if maybe Boston, you know, UFC 292. Who knows, right? But Thompson was like, no, I don't want to do that. Dana White was on vacation, and Thompson felt like by the time Dana gets back, we're going to sort this out. What Dana seemed to imply was, we're going to get you enough money to take care of the expenses you had, kind of like a fair number to at least cover the fact that you did train for this fight, you didn't make weight. How do you feel about that, Goz? I mean, think about this. I know this didn't happen. I know it's a what about, but if Thompson had made it, let's say Fajeda made it, weighed in and made it on time, and Fajeda passed out and hit his head on Saturday, I bet you the UFC would have paid Thompson then.
Yeah.
You know what that I mean? I don't know if they would have paid him the whole thing or what. You know, Ariel Helwani went on kind of a rant saying, you guys got the money. This guy did his job. Just pay him. Pay him his $300,000 or whatever it is that he makes. He makes a lot of money. I understand that too, but I guess I do understand the UFC's point in terms of, we do try and pay fighters and get them out of there and get them going because they did make an effort. Their job is to train and fight, make weight, and Thompson did all that. He just decided not to fight, and he is giving up a disadvantage. But what I do believe is maybe there should be a limit of what will pay you on fight night. You know, just because we've gotten some 10-10 guys, 12-12 guys, 20-20 guys, doesn't mean we're going to pay just anyone that much money for not fighting. Now, in that Helwani rant, he did say, hey, some people might have showed up to Salt Lake and paid that money because Wonder Boy was on the card. Some of them may have said, oh, cool, I get to see the BMF as well and a few other things. Not everyone just said, here's my money because of Wonder Boy, but you don't know. What Wonder Boy's point is, I showed up and some people did pay some money. There is every fight card has a budget that's allocated. So that money's already there. And it made me think, you know how when fighters draw goes? So let's say you and I fight, you make 100, 100, I make 100, 100. We fight to a draw. Well, you make your 100 for show. I make my 100 for show, but neither one of us won. But UFC has allocated that they're going to pay either you or me 100 because they expect one of us to win. But if it's a draw, now what? They just keep the 100. You see what I'm saying? So I get that. Some of that money is budgeted to go out there. So there should be something that says, we will pay you your show money, but maybe up to a certain limit that's something that I think the UFC should learn from and just kind of address going forward. Because when you do something in the past, it's kind of expected of you in the future. And when you're someone that is a choir boy, like Stephen Thompson, a good guy, a team guy, you would almost think he'd get the most benefits of the doubt.
I'll tell you, I actually really enjoyed this Dana White and how he tackled this. He didn't call anybody an idiot or who do you think you are. He stood up there calmly and he explained the situation. And I didn't have an issue with his explanation. I thought a lot of it made sense. And I was going into it, Team Wonder Boy, you got to pay him. But Dana's explanation and the way he laid it out made me understand their side a little bit. He's kind of right to a certain extent, right? Like, that is a lot of money to just pay somebody for not doing anything either. I think you're right, George, in the sense that, hey, it's like, we didn't know that, right? That he was going to pay camp expenses and all that. That definitely lowers the burden a little bit. But there maybe should be something put in place, a system, so that we don't have these conversations. We just know automatically, okay, this is what happened. This is how it's handled. I think as the media, we should know that. I think fighters, obviously, they should know that. The organization should put that out there. So I'd like to see that going forward. But the way he actually handled it and the way he explained it is how I wish he would tackle more things.
He did do pretty good. He did do pretty good. Except, again, there still is a little bit of a God, I hate using this word. But there's this little bit of a vibe of arrogance. Kind of like, what are you, crazy for even bringing the question up? Because, again, we've heard stories of you paying fighters who made weight, but because their opponents didn't, they fucked up somehow by either not making weight or getting hurt or pussing out. I don't know. A fight didn't take place, but you felt bad for the other fighter, so you took care of them. What you didn't tell us was that there was a limit of your generosity of, you know, hey, had you been a 10-10 guy? Yeah, sure, no problem. Here's the check. But because he's a 300 grand guy, well, that's a whole different story. We got to get something for our money. But, you know, like I say, I've seen this often happen with limits. You know, you get, we'll do 2% up to a certain limit or something like that. I see it in life all the time. Something like that would make sense. Because, look, Wonder Boy probably showed up with his dad, who's his trainer, and a couple other coaches. And along the way, back in South Carolina, probably someone was his nutrition or strength and condition. You know how Jorge Masvidal says, Monday is the day you go to the bank, you get your money out, and you pay your coaches. That's what you're supposed to do. And it's a great day for him because usually, especially if it's coming off a win, he gets to take care of people or whatever. That's got to be on Wonder Boy's mind. Like, how do I take care of these guys? I was supposed to get paid. I made weight. He didn't. It was 3 pounds. It wasn't half a pound. And he referenced the fight, which by split decision, it lost. It might have made a difference. You know, we all know that we're going to get put through hell. And then we're all going to, you know, weigh in the same. And then we're going to have as fair of a fight as we can on Saturday. But if one guy isn't allowed to do that and all he gets is a 20% tax, but yet he's a bigger guy and he snuffs me and now he gets his win show and win money. And lately we've been seeing some guys get show, win, and if it's an exciting performance, they still get bonus. Remember the strict rule used to be if you miss weight, no bonus. And I think I've seen it either once or twice in the last year or so where just this exception was made.
Well, isn't that everybody's biggest gripe, right? The consistency.
Right. And like what we don't know is what I'd love to hear from Thompson is what was presented to you? Because it's not easy to rehydrate and then 2 weeks later, like if they told him, hey, on the 19th in Boston, will you fight Ian Machado Gary? You know, or some other killer, you know, 3 weeks later, who knows what? Like, he may be thinking, bitches, I'm 40. I'm not going to fight someone younger than me. I'm already making an exception with this Michelle Fajita guy, you know, but I would want to fight someone ahead of me because I want to fight for a title. So I'm not just going to take any name. Or if they presented him with some grinder, you know, like I say, The other day, I remember I was a little, I was ticked off. You can ask Goes, because Oday Osborne lost to a guy that debuted from Kazakhstan. No shade at the guy. Okay. That guy did his job. He beat Oday Osborne fair and square. But what I was saying was Oday, I think, was pushing 10 fights in the UFC. And if Oday would have won, the only thing we would have said was, hey, congrats, shake his hand. But we really don't know much about the other guy, so we couldn't say, hey, congrats, way to get past so-and-so. That guy didn't have a name, a ranking, a nothing. You know what I mean? And so it could be that Thompson, same thing. Like, who, maybe he got presented someone where he just doesn't gain anything. He doesn't take a step forward. So we have to hear both sides. Well, we never hear both sides. And that's the part that's a little frustrating.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, there's lots of other stories that we can get to, and we will get to. But I think right now is a good time for our guest, Maurice Greene. Maurice Greene is going to be fighting on August 18th on ESPN, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. His opponent will be Hannah Fajeda. Let me actually clarify that. That's when the main card starts. These guys are the main event, so they'll probably fight about 2 hours later. Co-main event that night, Larissa Pacheco against Olena Kolesnik. That should be a great fight. Nice co-main and main all on ESPN. No excuses. Catch it, folks. The winners of these fights move on to the finals later on this year. We'll be back with the Crochet Boss, Maurice Greene. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back with another superstar from the sport of mixed martial arts. Today, we get to talk to the Crochet Boss himself, Maurice Greene, who looks like he just finished a workout there in the pool.
Right in the middle of it. We're right in the middle of it.
Oh, you're in the middle of it.
Yeah, I knew yesterday I was going to be here while I was doing my, while I was going to talk. So I got enough done before and I'll finish the rest after. So it's all good.
So tell us, because we've seen you and some other, or we've seen, you know, you were just talking about John Jones, others in the pool. Explain to us this workout and how it pushes you compared to other workouts.
It's amazing how you can feel like you're about to drown in 3 feet of water. You know, it shows you how to relax when your body's kind of under stress, you know. It's a great cardio workout. It's a full body workout, very different from running. I think the cardio is much harder than running. Yeah, you know, a lot of guys aren't doing it, period, point blank in the story, you know. And I'm getting older. I'm no spring chicken over here. So the pool is a savior for my cardio and everything. You know, I run still, but I just don't do as much run. I used to put it 15 plus miles a week. I'm just getting older. And, you know, your body just doesn't recover like it used to when you used to be able to pound that body up. So this is a way to still get the same type of cardio workout I'm seeking and be a little easier and a little better on my body. You know, and also when I'm real tight or if something's tight, it gives it, actually swimming helps me loosen some of those muscles up. So it's good all the way around. I'll probably continue this into my old age for real.
So my next question was going to be, does it complement running or does it replace running? But you said you still run a little bit.
I run because I want to, not because I have to. It can replace running if I want
really?
To. Yeah, I think so. You know, boxing coaches would say, you know, that spring you get from running, but shit, your Achilles tendons, your knees, you know, I'm 260-something pounds, so... you're always getting pounded on those knees every time you run. It doesn't matter how young or how old we get. It's just over time, it's worse on the knees and it's worse on the joints and it's worse on those right. things. Well, I'm able to save those joints and those knees and those ankles and all that stuff to get fucked up in the cage if they got to get messed up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
you kind of hesitated, though. You said, I think it can replace it. But are you pretty certain that if you only did swimming, you could go strong 15, 25 minutes, whatever is necessary?
Yeah, I didn't run at all. For the last fight I fought Ante, I didn't run at all. I just chose not to run. Yeah, I just chose not to run.
That is interesting. I wonder why this isn't done more.
I don't know. A lot of people swear by putting that road work in. And there's nothing wrong with it. I love putting the road work in, you know? I'm swimming now at elevation, but when I run, you know, I'll go up to 6,200, 6,200, 6,500 feet above sea level and run up there in the foothills. And then you can take it a step further and go up to the mountain and probably be like 7,000, 8,000. I don't even know how high it is up there, but I know it's that high. So, I mean, you can, but, you know, I'm just getting older, man. Just less is more. And I'm trying to find things that I can do to keep me in it with these young men, but not take so much of a beating. And training, so I can give it all I got in the cage, you know what I mean, instead of nursing an injury in there.
No, it sounds brilliant, honestly. Okay, how about this? From the first day that you tried this, and I don't know if you had pool experience before or not, how long did it take you to do finally get going and do a nice stroke and just, you know, not have to worry about swallowing water or anything
like that? I'll ask my swimming coach. Hey, Jesse, how long you think it took me from the first, because I've been swimming with him this whole time. How long you think it took me from when you first started swimming with me to get to a flow state? I mean, you still struggle with it. I mean, it's an ongoing battle I fight, but how long would you say till I really started swimming good?
Took about 4 months.
4 months, huh? Yeah. Man, I'm considering this. This is interesting.
At the time we were doing it, you know, 3 times a week, I think. We were swimming 3 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, and the swimming workouts ain't no punk. You know, it's not just laps. You know, we do dive and goes in the small pool where you dive in. You got to get your big ass out, turn around and dive back in and get your big ass out. You know, those are fucking tough. You know, we tread water. There's a bunch of stuff he has us doing.
Have you done the get like a 2 gallon milk, empty it out, fill it with water, and then hold it and just tread with your legs? Have you done that yet?
Nope, not me. I sink. Now my teammate over here, Dwight, you know, he likes extracurricular shit. So, you know, when he's treading, he holds his hands out for 10 seconds. Coach makes him do that. He makes him try to get his titties above the water. That means you got to kick harder to get for 10 seconds. He does all that extracurricular shit. I'm just trying to tread water for 5 minutes, okay? That shit's hard enough.
I played water polo in high school, and I remember we did that for Hell Week, and it was not fun at all. You do start to sink, but you eventually get it. But I guess we did different types of things. Yes, we swam, but man, it's been so long. I just don't know if I could recover the stroke, you know, because I'm big and fat and shit.
Hey, you'll get it. You'll get it. The nice thing about the water, is it like water displacement or whatever the fuck they call it, where it's like, you know, your weight. You're a little lighter in the water, so you'll get it. I bet you if you hop back in the water and you started doing it, may take you a little bit, but it'd be just like riding a bike if you've done it long enough, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maurice, can you do this in the ocean too? Would you do it in the ocean?
Hell no. Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I got no, you know, it's eventful enough being black. I don't need to go swim with the sharks. You know, I don't need to, you know, do all that that extreme sports shit. I feel like being black is an extreme sport in America.
You do swim with the sharks. I've seen that team you got in Albuquerque, man. Those guys, you guys got quite a squad over there. Those are some sharks.
We do, man. We do. I mean, thankful to John Jones. John Jones really was the catalyst behind getting it all together. You know, putting himself a camp together inadvertently. You know, he gave a small group of men who want to come in and work hard and, you know, who really just want to work hard and are good people to come in and really take advantage of some training and that you can't buy anywhere. You can't go in a gym and really get it. It's all different. It's tailored. It's not the same. So I'll say it. I've said it a million times. I'm thankful to John for almost like a reigniter of my career and, you know, where I thought I was going. I was damn near close to thinking about retirement because I didn't have a gym. I just didn't think I had the support. And luckily, I John wanted me to come in the room with him. And, you know, through this, it reignited my flame quite a bit. And it also helped me learn how to train smart and hard, you know, versus just beating my body up. You know, you don't realize how much recovery, rest, massages, rolling, how much that should be a part of your daily regimen that a lot of us just put to the wayside because we're young and we can just bounce back. Well, you know, I'm 37 years old. You just don't bounce back sometimes without doing something about it. So, man, we got a great group of guys. We got an even better group of coaches and a bunch of dedicated guys that come in there to get the job done, you know?
Mm-hmm. Maurice Green joins us here on MMA Junkie Radio. He's got a fight coming up Friday, August 18th on ESPN. He'll be headlining with Henan Fajeda. The winner moves on to the finals to fight for $1 million. So there'll be another semifinal that night as well. Dennis Goldsloff against Jordan Heiderman. All right, Goes, what do you have for Maurice Green, our guest here?
Maurice, I'm going to have to go back to the pool because I have a question about that. As soon as I saw you doing it and talking about it, I thought about something. I'm me, you're you, so you know more about this, but tell me if I'm off here. What about the breathing? Because I have to imagine in swimming, you have to kind of relegate your breathing and get into patterns. But in fighting, and even all sports, really, you have to be able to regulate your breathing as well. Do you correlate those? Do they help each other out?
Oh, yeah. So we had I've had breathing coaches, and we've had a breathing coach come in and kind of, teach us the process of, how your body goes through a recovery during those breathing exercises. So, yeah, in between, sometimes we'll do these suck too. We did three, we go every 30 seconds. So you swim a 25 every 30 seconds, and it takes you about 18 to 21 seconds probably to get down there. As you start to fatigue, it gets a little longer, like 21. But if you're in good shape, we can swim 18, 17, 18, maybe 18, 19. But anyway, you got maybe 12 seconds to make a recovery before you got to go again. We do six of those. And that shit's tough, man. But you find a way to recover through, the breathing exercises that I've learned. And, I still do it in the cage, The way somebody's breathing tells me a lot about their condition. So I pay attention to that little shit.
What about the mental side? I imagine when you're in the gym, just hearing the noises and what's going on, I imagine fighting obviously is in the back of your mind. But when you're in the pool, it's just you in the water. What actually goes through your head? Do you think about the fight at all, or the train, or are you thinking about
it? You have no time. Hey, I'm not trying. My black ass trying not to drown out here in 4 feet of water. So I ain't thinking about no fight. What I'm thinking about is my next breath. What I'm thinking about is, all right, when I'm under the water, I need to exhale. On what stroke do I get all this air out? So when I turn my head, I can get the most air in so I can be calm in my strokes. What happens is if I don't get enough air in between, I rush my strokes. If I rush my strokes, I can't get enough air on the other side. Or, sometimes when you come up, if you don't come up right, you get water in your mouth. Like, for instance, just a minute ago, I was just swimming 100 down, back. And when I'm coming back for the 50, I lost it. I just lost my breath. Well, now I got to suck it up for my next breath. And on my next breath, hopefully catch my breath, which I did, and I finished it smooth. But, like, you have those moments where it's like, at first, when it first used to happen to me, I'd freak out and I'd have to stop. Now I'm finding my way to recover, find my breath, get enough breath. It's taking time, but, I think now I'm swimming pretty damn good. And I found my peace here. It's very peaceful. It's quiet. We got music going usually, but you can only hear that in between. You don't hear that in the water. It's just you in the water.
When you do sit down and think about the fight, what is it that you envision happening in this fight? How do you see this fight playing out for you?
Me getting my hand raised, There's no points involved now, There's no, I don't have a incentive to finish him in the first round besides my own incentives. If an opportunity arises, you bet your sweet ass I'm going to finish him as soon as possible so I can get back out, have an even better training camp, not take too much damage, and get ready for this maybe rematch with Goldsoff or Heiderman, either one. Or not rematch with Heiderman, what I really want is I want to fight Goldsoff again. I got to write that wrong in my head. But, first and foremost, I got to take care of Ran.
Maurice, does PFL, does it feel like home now? And have you kind of figured things out and just acclimated to everything that goes on with PFL, with point systems, all that? Does it feel like you're home now?
It's always felt, wherever I'm at feels like home to me. I'm unlike any of these other fighters outside of the cage. Most of them ain't got no sense of person. I mean, if you look at Ran, who cares to watch him fight? Nobody fucking cares to watch him fight. You know, there's no personality there. He can barely speak fucking English. Nor is he probably trying to learn it. I don't know, man. I don't know. I just, you know, there's a lot more layers to me than just this fucking big, mean fighter. You know, one of my sponsors is actually So Tights, who has a magnetic cutting system that I use to cut my tags for my crocheted hats and make my tags. So that's one of my sponsors that nobody in MMA will ever have because they're not like me. I'm in my own lane. I'm going to stay in my own lane. I'll always be in my own lane. The only difference is this year I'm going to be a world champ. It's going to start with running through Ran Ran.
Keep it real with us, all right? I know. Can your trainer hear us right now?
No. Okay. I'll tell him, though.
Are you... deep down inside, are you closer to, I can't wait for these guys to shut up so I can get back into my workout? Or are you like, ask me another question so I could take a little bit of a breather?
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. I'm good, man. My cardio's good. My condition's good. I actually leave here and go straight to a lifting session where I do more cardio after I lift. So Mondays and Wednesdays are tough days anyway. I go from swimming to lifting. But I can say, honestly, I legitimately enjoy the process. I used to have coaches, even when I trained at Factory X. I'm not too big on fucking Mark Montoya. But he has a really good program over there and a bunch of good guys in that room. And he used to always tell us, and I'll never forget some of the things he said because some of it is valuable. But he used to tell us, you know, you got to find a way to enjoy the process. And for a long time, you know, it was all about money for me. And again, when I've gotten this room with John, it reignited that love of the process, because that's consistent. You know, that's consistent in my life, this process. I may not always fight forever, but this process will always be consistent, meaning I can continue doing this stuff when I'm done. So I really process. You know, I used to be 330 pounds. I love being in shape. I'll never be fat again. You know, MMA has given me my health back at 37. I look at some of the people I graduated from high school with, and the motherfuckers fat and out of shape. And I'm still in shape, and I'm still looking young. And, you know, I like it. I like it. So, no, when I get done here, I'm going to turn around, and I'm going to finish my workout, whether I like it or not. But if I didn't get the rest, I'd be right in the workout with Dwight.
Will you miss doing interviews when you retire?
I'll still be doing it. I'm acting, man. I just actually booked my first role in a movie, which I can't speak about. But so I'm acting. I'm sure I'll be doing something in the media somewhere. It just won't be MMA, probably. I'll probably ride off into the sunset and work with some yarn companies and continue my acting career and all that good stuff. Maybe I'll follow in the coaching. I don't know. You know, right now I'm focused on MMA. I'm focused on this tournament, and I'm really focused on being a world champion because I'm trying to leave this sport with something. I know that, you know, a lot of people say, no, you did a lot in the sport. But for me, you know, if I can't be a world champion, this is all for naught. I mean, that's how I think about it. You know, I've given a lot of my life to this. I look at my whole life. It's been closing on 14 years. And yeah, man, it's time. You know, I said it last time against Ante. You know, the time is now. And at the end of that fight, I lost that fight for myself by choosing not to get up, thinking I won the fight. That was a tougher pill to swallow than not having the gas tank to get up. That knowing that I had the gas tank and choosing to stay there because I thought I was winning and I was just going to go to the semis. Was a tough pill to swallow and lesson learned. So, yeah, I'll still be doing interviews when this is done, man. Come on, I'm the crochet boss. You guys ain't never seen me.
All right. Just making sure you don't forget about us. When you become a movie star or TV star, you said you got something in the works, so that's cool. We'll catch up then. Last question. You know, you were in our studio in November of 2018. And it was at the Mandalay Bay. You were going to fight Michelle Batista. You wound up winning by triangle choke. That was about 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago.
Six.
I wanted to ask you. Six years ago?
6 years. That was 2018, right? 2018. November 2018. Maybe you're right. You're right. My bad. I can't count.
No worries.
Don't worry about me.
All right. So what I wanted to ask you is, how much better is the Maurice Green we're talking to now than the Maurice Green that was in our studio 4.5 years ago, almost 5 years ago?
Man, the Maurice Green that was in your studio in 4.5 years was still unsure if this was the right path to take. You know, I fell into the sport of mixed martial arts at 25 years old, took my first fight in 30 days, and I just fucking fought and fought and fought. And, you know, I just made a decision when my fiance was pregnant with my son. You know, I'm not going back to college. This is going to have to work. So, you know, a lot of my UFC career, like I said, it was all about the money. And, you know, I didn't train quite as hard. I wasn't as dedicated to my craft. I loved jiu-jitsu at the time, but I really wasn't as dedicated. You know, I did a lot of moving. You know, there was just a lot of shit that was going on. And I also had a little bit of a drug problem. And, you know, I thought I was this special athlete. And, you know, my talent would win me fights until I got humbled too many times to a point where it's like, oh, no, hard work works, Maurice. You know, do the fucking work. And the athlete you're looking at now is the athlete that's 260-some pounds. I lift three times a week. You know, I think of it this way. I never used to lift most of my fight career until I got with, of course, John's lifting coach, Jordan, at Zia Strength Systems. And, you know, I put on some size that I can maintain and I can breathe with this size. And there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of valuable things I've gotten out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, you know, I'm only thankful, but the only way to pay back Albuquerque for as much as they did to me is go out and win this world championship and bring another belt back here to Albuquerque with me and Team Bones.
Sounds great. We look forward to it on ESPN, folks. Friday, August 18th, you can watch Maurice Greene, our guest here, against Henan Fajeda in the main event. And they got a great card there. There's two semifinals in the heavyweights and two semifinals as well in – let's see, who else is going with you guys that night? It looks like the ladies featherweights.
The ladies.
Yeah, that's all.
Amber Larissa Pacheco,
big name.
Larissa, she was on my season Ultimate Fighter, too.
Yeah. All right, great stuff, Mo. Thanks for the time. Get back to that swim workout.
I will. Thank you, gentlemen. You have a wonderful day. Thank you,
you
for
too.
Having me.
Take care. We'll see you.
Bye.
See you. Man, goes, I got to get them goggles out and maybe start swimming a little, because there are times when I walk Yogi and I hit this little incline going uphill. Oh, my lower back tightens up a little.
Your lower back?
Yeah. I know he's talking more about knees and ankles and saving them from running. That's why he swims so much. But I think, yeah, a little bit of my lower back, my hip tightens up a little.
That's weird. Yeah, he was, you know, he was fun when we had him in studio back then. And he's just a different cat, really. But, this whole being with John Jones seems like it's changed his life.
Oh, yeah. New life, basically. All right, let's get back to some of this news out there. We'll hustle through it. Sean O'Malley, he's smart, goes. He's saying he's fighting the prime bantamweight GOAT right now in Aljamain Sterling. So he's putting Aljamain Sterling over. Now, Aljamain Sterling's already over. He's a damn champion, for crying out loud. But O'Malley has a lot of fans. And to his own fans, he's basically giving praises to the champ. But it's smart, because it's going to look even better if he beats him, because obviously he put him on that high pedestal. So I think part of it was a little bit of showmanship, mind games, who knows what. Respect, probably some respect there as well. However, one part I disagree with is, he says he's the best bantamweight the UFC's ever had. He's defended the belt more times than anyone. Okay, the best bantamweight the UFC's ever had, that's up for debate. That could be either Cruz, I guess, would be in the running, or Sterling. Maybe some would even argue Dillashaw. Who knows? But I think Cruz and Sterling is probably the one that the two that come up the most. Cruz has 5 title defenses. Now, some of them did occur in WEC, but I think there's enough respect in the industry that we count those, because that was the highest level of bantamweight fighting that was taking place at that time. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of like give them that, you know what I'm saying? I would say Cruz still has the most title defenses. If you want to play the nitpick game, maybe some of those occurred in the UFC, and maybe him and Aljo are tied because of that. But I still think any hardcore fan would say, no, you still trail Cruz by 2. Sterling's got 3, Cruz has 2.
You know what? Sean O'Malley, I go back and forth on him, man. But the one thing I will say, I think he's a very intelligent guy. And I think he's an intelligent fighter. I think he kind of, I guess the easiest way of putting it is, I think he just gets it. And so that is a very smart thing to say. But when I look at this fight, I just feel like Aljamain Sterling can do everything Sean O'Malley can do, and maybe even better, right? The only thing that keeps me around is the fact that I do feel like Sean O'Malley is improving from fight to fight. And maybe it's enough of a jump to catch Aljo. But the little bit of heat that they have, the way Sean is, that's what's really gotten me excited about the fight. So, and I think that a lot of that's a credit to Sean O'Malley and how he promotes himself, how he promotes fights. I'm excited to see this one.
Sterling should be thankful too, because it's probably going to help him land a bigger check. This fight will be that much bigger because of Sean O'Malley's popularity.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as, well, that story goes, yeah, I just wanted to point out that Cruz is ahead. And I think Cruz is still regarded as the bantamweight GOAT. Sterling's closing the gap for sure. But Sterling's going to have to go above and beyond a little bit, because he came out of the gate a little slow. The way he won the title, boy, a lot of people had a sour taste in their mouth. But as Sterling, A, got past Jan fair and square, and now has started to really, you know, pour it on some fighters, that respect is coming, and it's well-deserved. It's not his fault TJ Dillashaw walked into a fight with a shoulder that was ready to pop out at any moment. Sterling just did what he had to do at that moment, you know? But it wasn't his fault there, and it wasn't his fault he got illegally kneed by Jan to begin with. Was there some acting? Yeah. And I would tell Sterling that to his face. I'd say, come on, bro, you did make a lot more faces than you needed to. We already knew that guy did something egregious. You just had to basically sit there in pain, and we knew the title was going to be yours, and that's the way it should be. It was that illegal, but there was some additional face making. I think that kind of went a little bit overboard, yeah. And that's fine. We'll probably have a good laugh at that when we're all a little bit older. Point is, he's a tough SOB, and he gets past Sean O'Malley. He'll be at four. I don't know if he'll hang out for one more to tie Cruz. But he really keeps saying more and more about how this might be it. I need to go up. But again, what awaits him at 145 goes is like a grim reaper, man. Oh, I would avoid that guy as long as I can in Volkanovski, with the excuse of, well, I kind of want to tie Cruz, and I just go through one more weight cut if I had to.
I would too. I think another thing that's going to help him is I legitimately think Sean O'Malley is a really good fighter. And I think he's going to get better and have a good career. And I think, you know, the more impressive work he does in that division, the better it's going to make that Aljamain Sterling win win over O'Malley. So yeah. I think there are ways Aljamain Sterling could, I don't know, he could be competitive at 145, but I just really feel like 135 is, he's dominant. He could stay there and really wreck shop for a while. I mean, if he gets a hold of Volk, yeah. You know, sometimes he's a backpack and he just drains the life out of you. But you have such a good thing going on where you're at. Like, I would really just try and cement a legacy there.
That's what I'm saying. Volk showed me that he can withstand what Aljo presents, because he was impressive in his defenses, submission defenses versus Makachev, who's just a big, big dude, you know. But here's the latest 292 card, in case you're wondering, with the switch. It's Sterling versus O'Malley for the bantamweight title, Zhang Wei Li versus Amanda Lemos for the strawweight title, Ian Machado Gary versus Neil Magny, he slips in for Jeff Neal, Mario Batista, a recent guest on Junkie Radio, versus Cody Garbrandt, a former champion, Pedro Munoz versus Marlon Vera. All right, Derek Lewis goes, he signed an 8-fight deal. This is where I was going to tell you where, what's Wonder Boy's version? What's Dana's version? You know, and it could become so much more exciting of a topic. That's all we know, folks. He just signed an 8-fight deal. We don't know the money. We don't know the bonuses, the this, the that, whatever. Just Hunter Campbell got the deal done. He kind of nodded at Dana White, who was asked about this during a Power Slap 4 post-fight news conference. And he said, yes, it's done. So congrats to the Black Beast. Remember, he had an option there of possibly going to PFL and being a $2 million fighter, because that's what the first or the opponent for Francis Ngannou gets. But it looks like Derek Lewis just really wanted to stay with the UFC. Maybe he got close enough money that, you know, it's the same thing, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think here's what we do know. No matter what, Derek Lewis is probably making more money because of something Francis Ngannou did, right?
Yeah.
I've been calling it the Francis Ngannou effect. And this is one of the first things that have popped up because of it. No matter what, Derek Lewis probably added more money to a contract that, had Francis not done what he did, might have been a little bit smaller. And now, here you go. This is a fighter making more money because of what Francis Ngannou did. And that's why I constantly push that what he did was such a big deal.
It's just sad that we don't know the details. And 5% of that is because I'm just a nosy MF-er goes. But the other 95% is because I really feel for these athletes who have just been deceived into thinking that if they release this, it's going to really impact their personal life. You know, every fucking day, all right, from the end of May, mid-May, to about mid-August, I log on anything Manchester United related, and I know exactly what those guys make, what it would cost to transfer one guy to another from one team to another team, how much the team would make, how much the agent stands to make, how much the athlete is going to get in wages, you know, for that particular deal or what they had for their last deal. And guess what? That soccer athlete isn't getting badgered by all his homies for loans, or maybe they are, whatever, but they can handle it. You don't think a tough guy like Derek Lewis can handle it a lot better than a soccer player? A soccer player can, you know, what's he going to say? Stop asking me, I might kick you. Derek Lewis will put your lights out. That's the biggest bullshit line out there. You know, I think he should release what it is, and then the next guy can play off of that and use that as some sort of leverage, kind of like what you called goes the Francis Ngannou effect. I'm sure Derek Lewis used some of that. Get some of that money that's out there, guys. You know what I mean? And the UFC has said, you can make it public, it won't bother us. Well, of course, we know it will bother them, but they did say you can make it public. But guess what? If you win, you win. But I'm telling you, so many of these athletes could be doing way better if they just kind of put their shit out there. But they're under this spell, man. They are just under a spell. And it's weird because a lot of these agents dabble in football, but they bend the knee, man, when it comes to the UFC and their executives. They just don't want to go there at all.
Oh, yeah.
I can only imagine. I'm going to take a guess here. It's 8 fights. Derek Lewis ain't showing up from less than 500,000. And I bet you because of the Francis Ngannou effect, I don't think he got $1 million a fight, but I would say maybe he ends at $1 million a fight. I'd say he probably gets 750 just to show. Don't worry about the win bonus. Probably for the next 4 fights, and then maybe it goes up from there to $1 million. Who knows? But I bet you he wanted to assure himself that within maybe the first 2 fights, he wanted to make what he couldn't make by facing Francis Ngannou.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of guessing 8 around there. But yeah, 758 around there, I think.
Right. He might say, okay, in one fight, I can get this over Ngannou, but in 2 fights, I can get this. But I stay in the UFC, which is the biggest promotion, which is where I'm at. I'm happy with these guys. I could possibly see that, because I don't know what Ngannou's deal is. I don't know how long he'll be at PFL. We know he's got the Fury matchup, and then he's got some PFL run in him. And then after that, who knows, you know? Because Ngannou could fight one time, and that's it. He only assures his opponent gets $2 million when he faces them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If Ngannou beats Lewis, here's your $2 million. But then Ngannou wants to face someone else, Lewis isn't getting $2 million then.
Yeah.
So anyway, whatever. It's done. Hey, Tough. Tough is winding up, goes. They had the coaches challenge this past Tuesday's show. For those that didn't watch it, here we go. You got 5 seconds to turn the show off and come back in about 3 minutes or so. 5 minutes maybe to play it safe. 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. All right. These two guys had to get into a cold plunge tub. And they went about waist high, so they didn't sink in all the way down to their neck or their chin. So they sat in some cold water, and while they did it while answering trivia questions. Now, the editing made it look like it was maybe 10 minutes long, but apparently, according to Dana, it was 30 minutes long, and he's really, really pissed at the production team. The only thing I'll say is, and yes, I know by now it sounds like I'm a Dana hater. I'm not. Dana was sitting there, goes, with a big old smile next to Brooklyn Wren and the rest of them, laughing, kind of almost giggling at those guys, you know, clattering. The teeth were clattering a little bit, and they were laughing. To me, it looked like they were all having a good time. I didn't know it was 30 minutes. Yes, I'm sure it could be dangerous, but they're also grown men who could just step out if they wanted to. You know, they knew that it would cost their team some money, so maybe could they have sped it up? Sure. What were your thoughts on all that when you heard what Dana said and when you watched it, and did you enjoy it?
I thought it was dumb. When we were watching it, I was thinking, wait a minute. I thought you can't stay there for very long. But I know one of the big components is the water cannot be above your heart for too long. I think that's like the really dangerous thing. And you're right, it was kind of low.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought maybe that was the adjustment. But if you're there and you're laughing along and having a good time, then you can't blame the production crew because you basically made the same mistake they did, right? So...
yeah,
I don't know that you throw them under the bus like that, but the episode was interesting. It was a different twist, right, on what we're used to seeing in coaches challenges.
Yeah, he was there. So he says he's done it. So if you've done it, I'm sure you know a lot about it. You got a lot of smart people around you, Dana. You could have spoke up at that moment, but whatever. Nothing happened. We're okay with it now. McGregor won. And what's funny is McGregor's made a little bit of a comeback, but it's kind of like, how can I put it to you? It's got a little twist to it. So he obviously was down 7-0 in the first 7 weeks. Then he won that last guy. And then after that, Katona became one of his guys, and he's won. So between his guy that won, and his name escapes me, I'll get it for you in a second. I got the thing open here. Katona, and then winning the coaches challenge, a little bit of a comeback. I was telling Goz yesterday, it breaks my heart that this guy is fighting these demons, because any scene with him when he's kind of sober is fucking hilarious, man. The guy cracks me up. They asked a question. I forgot what the question was. I know what the question was, but I forgot what the choices were. But I think it said, in what round did Conor McGregor get choked by Khabib Nurmagomedov? I mean, you look at McGregor, he was shaking, but he was in such a good mood that he just kind of laughed it off, like, bitch, why you got to bring that up, you know, as a question, when you could have probably brought up anything else. But he laughed it off pretty good. And then he was playing mind games with Chandler, because Chandler was struggling a little bit. I thought it was going to be the other way around. Usually the wrestlers are pretty tough with this kind of stuff, and I would think that they're closer to being cold plunge guys than a kickboxer from, you know, slash boxer from Ireland. But apparently Chandler hasn't done too much of this. Chandler got a nice question, because his question just had to do with how vicious of a KO artist Chandler's been. Has he had 11 KOs or 13 KOs, you know? But poor McGregor has to hear, in what round did he get strangled by the biggest nemesis he's ever faced? Luckily, he laughed it off. He had another funny line, too, when he was messing with Chandler. He goes, this is no problem. This is warm. I feel like I'm in a jacuzzi in one of my yachts. Oh, my God. That was hilarious. I love that. I love the challenge. McGregor won. It was cool. It was cool. As far as the season goes, the fight was awesome. I got you that name, by the way. It's Rico DiCiulio. He faces Cody Gibson next week. That's the last semifinal. DiCiulio is from his team. So he has a chance to face his other guy, which is Brad Katona, who, to be fair, is part of Team McGregor or Team SVG in real life. Mm-hmm. This other fight involved Jason Knight and Kurt Hollenbaugh. Wow, these guys smacked each other pretty good. In the end, Kurt Holoball won via TKO. Both guys pretty much stayed homies, kind of like Austin Hubbard did versus Roosevelt Roberts. All these guys are from Team Chandler. So in the finale, it'll be Hubbard versus Holoball. But I sure as hell hope that Knight and Roberts, whether they face each other or just someone else, get a shot to be in the finale, because those guys went out there and they performed, and they that part of their whole thing was redemption.
I think the most important thing is neither guy will probably be the same after that fight, you know, and that,
yeah,
that needs to be rewarded.
And Knight's had a few of those. Knight's had a few of those, man. Just to finish up here, Mike Perry goes, re-signs with BKFC. Good signing, right?
Very good. I mean, he's become kind of the face of that organization, and I think it just, it fits perfectly for him, for right now at least.
Yeah. I think he went as far as he was going to in MMA. Respect. He did well. He gained a lot of fans. We all enjoyed his fights. But he's standing out pretty much over there at BKFC. I think that's pretty legit. So good on him for that. Dylan Danis is facing Logan Paul in a boxing match. I don't know if some of you care about that. But because Danis is a notorious changer of plans, he has to pay. There's a $100,000 pullout clause if he withdraws from the boxing match. So that's a nice little twist. I guess Logan Paul doesn't want to waste his money. But they're supposed to fight in the UK, and it's on October 14th, the Misfits boxing banner. Also on that card, I believe, is KSI, who's another YouTuber. He's facing somebody, but I lost his name, so I don't think it matters too much, because I think most people just want to know about Dylan Danis. He's MMA, and I guess Logan Paul, he's pretty damn popular as is. Clarissa Shields re-signs with the PFL. We haven't seen her in about a year or so, if I'm not mistaken. So, okay, she's awesome as a boxer, folks. If you've never seen her box, she really is dope there. But in regards to her MMA career, what was it, 2021? We might be going on 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Since she's fought. So, I mean, we'd love to see her. The weekend has UFC on ESPN 51. In the main card is on ESPN at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Dos Anjos versus Luque is your main event. That's on Saturday. And tomorrow, Bellator 298, Storley versus Ward. That's on Showtime, the main card, 10 p.m. Eastern. On August 19th, Goz and I will be doing a watch-along for UFC 292 with Sterling versus O'Malley at the top of the bill. Don't forget, on Mondays, we're going at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern for our spinning backlick video franchise, weekly franchise that we do with our colleagues. It's only for the next 10 weeks while Dana White Contender Series does their 10-week run. The reason? Because the weigh-ins for Dana White Contender Series start at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, the normal start time. So we're adjusting and we're going an hour early, and we just want to give you as many reminders of that as possible. And just to finish up, nice little segue there, Dana White Contender Series started off. It was nice. Maybe we'll get a little bit more into it next week, because we've already gone a little bit over here. But Goz, it was a fun night on Tuesday night, man. We had a guy from Peru go in. They had a heavyweight. They had a kickboxer who had once been Pejeda, some guy named Almeida. He got in. They got this Australian guy named Tom Nolan, a lightweight that looks like a killer in the future.
He got in.
So we got a little bit of everything, man. There was some violence on Tuesday night over there at the Apex.
It was one of their better first weeks to kick off.
Yeah, for sure. We got to get down there for one of those, because it was really, really good. Congrats to Cesar Almeida, Tom Nolan, Kyle Machado, Peyton Talbot. That's the other guy. The guy that kind of looks like Bruce Leroy. And Kevin Borjas from Peru also in. Really, really nice body work at the end there. I think he caught Dana White's attention, so. Anyway, every Tuesday night, check it out. And Dana White Contender Series is also starting early for the first couple of weeks because of the Ultimate Fighter. So they're going at 7 Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, in case you got thrown off. They'll do that for a few more weeks. And then they'll go to their normal time of 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So a lot of start times there throwing your way, but I don't want you guys to miss anything. So don't forget the schedule tab at the top of the MMA Junkie website. It'll tell you everything you need to know. Who's on the card, what weight classes, location, daytime, all that stuff. All right, folks, we're going to bounce on out of here. Have a nice weekend. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll see you all on Monday for Spinning Backlick. Go out and be a champion, as always.